Remember what I said. So, in this class we were going to be talking about taste, but something came to my mind, and I didn't think a lot of people were coming to this class because we really didn't advertise it. And so I thought, well, maybe we can talk about something else. In a sense, it's related to everything in our life, and it's the way we're controlled, or the way our lives are controlled, the way our minds are controlled, the way our consciousness is controlled. And there's two ways it's controlled. Either it's controlled by the dualities that we confront, like desire and hatred, attraction and repulsion, and or we control our lives intentionally based on what are our goals? What are our intentions? What we want to achieve? Now, many people, including devotees, believe or think sometimes that that's difficult or impossible, that we are controlled. So we're so used to being controlled, and we all have our nature, we have our conditioned nature, and we're so used to being controlled that we don't really think that we have a lot of control. And as spiritualists, that we think, well, Krishna's in control, so how much control do I have? And we talked about this a little before in another class about balance, effort and mercy. But when you actually understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, you understand that, okay, we're not in control. Krishna's the supreme controller. That's a foundational principle. But we also hear that Krishna is fulfilling our desires. And if you look at your life, you'll see that what you meditate on, the directions you, I mean, you, or what you think about most is where you tend to go. And if you look at your life now, you'll see your life as a reflection of what you've done in the past and how you've thought. Generally, we don't get somewhere unless we're meditating on it, we're thinking about it. We have a lot of realization of that in the negative, from the negative sense, when we end up in situations which are not good, or situations we don't like, situations we'd prefer not to be in. But if you rewind the reel, you'll see that there were actions and thinking that brought us there. And the point of what I'm saying now is those actions and thinking are sometimes only just reactions to other things that are coming to us. So we sometimes feel maybe irresponsible or not responsible for our results because we're reacting to things that come to us. But we always have a choice of how we react. And so when we talk about attraction and repulsion, or desire and hatred, we might think, well, something's attractive to me, so I'm drawn to it, and therefore I sometimes fall into activities which are not helpful for my bhakti, or sometimes things are repulsive to me, and I move away from them, even if those activities may be beneficial for me. So all I'm doing is just doing what's natural, and it's practically not even conscious, I'm just reacting to situations. Okay, yeah, that is what we do, but what I'm saying is that's not what we should do. Because if you have a destination which is four blocks north, and you're attracted to something which is three blocks west, what do? So there's a nice park there, it's beautiful, but you have to go four blocks north. You have to be there. So what do? You go four blocks north, you don't go to the park, usually. I don't know about you, but that's what you'd normally do, right? And let's say you didn't do that, and then you showed up late for some important meeting or event, and everyone said, "Why are you late?" And you said, "Well, I saw a beautiful park, and it was just, I could smell the flowers, and it was so beautiful, I just couldn't avoid going there. I was just drawn to it, so I went there." And so what would people think? I think, "Well, what's wrong with you? Don't you have any control over your life? You're just pulled by your attractions." Or maybe you didn't come there because you thought it was going to be an unpleasant event, so you just showed up late, or you didn't come. And then when they and asked why you didn't come, you said, "Well, I didn't think it was going to be fun." I said, "No, but this was an important meeting." "Yeah, but I don't like meetings, so I didn't come." "But you told us you were coming." "Yeah, I know, but I got wet, cold feet, so I didn't come." So then what would people think? They think, "Don't you have any backbone? Don't you have any control of your life?" But if we actually look at our lives, and just think about it, so much of what we're doing is controlled by the things we like and the things we don't like. Irrespective of whether or not those things are good for us or not good for us. I mean, not entirely that way, but often our lives are just, we're just reacting to situations, not intentionally, but just reacting according to the impulses of the mind and senses. That's not a good way to live, is it? And, you know, those of you who took the japa workshop, and you can see that sometimes in our approach to japa, we're not intentional about our japa. We're just reacting to how we feel at the moment. "Well, I feel lazy. My mind is not controlled right now." So we'll just chant with an uncontrolled mind, or we'll fall asleep while we're chanting. So it doesn't produce the desired results, our ultimate desired results. So what I'm saying is, if we look at our lives, we'll see generally in every situation there's two things going on. Either we're reacting to situations based on attraction and repulsion, or desire and hatred, or just some continuum of that, some modification of that. Or we're acting intentionally according to a plan, according to a goal, according to what we want to achieve. And so what is smart, if we want to get anywhere, is to act according to an intention, a preconceived plan of where I want to be going, what I want to achieve, what, and not only externally, but what I want to be personally. Just like, how do you want to be? There's a difference between doing and being. I mean, you can do a lot of things, you can be intentional about a lot of things, and you can accomplish them, but you may not be the kind of person you would ultimately like to be while accomplishing those things. Just like in Krishna consciousness, we have so many goals, especially in the field of presenting Krishna consciousness to other people, we have so many goals, but how we achieve those goals is as important, if not sometimes more important, than the goals themselves. So that's the question of how do you want to be? Okay, you have a goal, maybe you're clear on it, but how do you want to be in achieving that goal? How do you want to act? What kind of person do you want to be like that? And say, "Well, this is how I'm like." Okay, that's how you're like. Is that the way you want to be? If not, do you have some control? Yes, you do. Do you have ultimate control? No, Krishna has ultimate control. But we do have a lot of control of how we can be. And so we don't have to live our life in reaction mode, always reacting to situations. "Well, this is just how I am, I'm just reacting." So it's really, really important to be in the consciousness, or to be of the consciousness of what you want to achieve, both externally, and what you want to achieve internally as a person, and the qualities you want to develop, and how you want to be when you're achieving what it is you want to achieve. And if we don't have that, if we don't have the intention of what we want to achieve and how we want to be, then attraction and repulsion will control our life. Desire and hatred will control our life. And you can look, you can see. We're like magnets drawn to what we're attracted to and repulsed by things that repulse us, the things we don't like. And we're being pulled. That's not a good way to live. So attraction and repulsion control us when we don't control our own lives. And in my work with devotees, I find that many, many devotees, maybe they're not conscious of this, but believe their control is very limited. And they verbalize it, which is terrible, because it's reinforcing, "Well, I can't be that way, I can't do this." Okay, we all have our nature. Some are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras. So there is a certain way we are. But within how we are, we have choices of how we react in situations, and we can react in better ways. And I think some things are not indicative of our nature. They're indicative of our responses to situations. They're indicative of the choices we make. They're indicative of our ability to be more intentional about what we say, what we do, even intentional about how we feel about certain situations. Oftentimes, what I run into in my work, and I think you will run into this also in your own life and the lives of others, is that people are very upset about something, very distressed about something, and therefore being controlled by the upset and controlled by the distress. And it's like it's a ghost that haunts them, and you see them, they're really distraught, and you see them 5 years later, and they're still distraught by the same thing. It's interesting. It's like sometimes we allow things to control our lives so much that we just put ourselves in a corner, and then we're reacting in a way which is not helpful for us. It's not helpful for the people we deal with. And then we think, but this is just how it is. This is the situation. And therefore, in this situation, this is just how I react, or how we think how anybody would react. And we get caught in that. And then we don't realize that there are different ways of reacting. There are different ways of seeing a situation. We tend to see it one way, and therefore we react in one way. And there are different ways of seeing a situation. And if you see it differently, you react differently. And when Prabhupada was here, we had this, a common problem was the devotees weren't satisfied in their service. They were doing something and they were getting antsy. And they just wanted to move and go somewhere and do something else. So Prabhupada would say to them, no, a Vaishnava is satisfied in any situation. So then the question is how to learn to be satisfied. We can, it's amazing, but you can learn to be satisfied in a situation in which normally you wouldn't be satisfied, especially if it's important to be in that situation and it's important to work with it. So can we exist peacefully in control of ourselves, independent of the situation we're in? Yes, we can. Now, does the situation affect us? Yes, but it also affects us to the degree that we allow it to. So obviously, if the situation is good, we want to allow it, we will, and we want to allow it to affect us because it's positive. If the situation is not good, then we don't want it to have a negative effect on us. So we want to, how should we say, we remain according to how we want to be. As I was saying before, okay, this situation could potentially bring me down, but how do I want to be? I want to be positive. I don't want to be controlled by it, and I don't have to be. It seems like we do because we're so used to acting that way. And just like certain things may upset us, do they have to upset us? Well, it seems like they have to upset us, doesn't it? Because we may always get upset by them. So if we get upset by them enough, it seems, well, that's just upsetting. That's so upsetting. That's so annoying. That's disgusting. And every time we're in that situation, we say, that's so annoying. That's so disgusting. That's so repulsive. I hate that. And so we're kind of reinforcing our behavior. Or we may do it internally, I'm no good, or I'm stupid, or whatever. So then we reinforce by saying that to ourselves. So and then we reinforce stupid behavior, you see? So we get in like a pattern. And then we continue to reinforce reactions, and then we react in the same way. And then that reinforces the fact, the apparent fact, that that's the only way I can react. And then I verbalize it, which reinforces that action. And then I create this cycle where I think all I can do is react in one way to this situation because that's the way I am. And it's not a good way to live. Especially not a good way if you to be Krishna conscious. So, what do, friends and neighbors? Well, as I've said many times, What is important is where we're going and the vision of what we want to be and where we want to go. That's always we should remain foremost. How do I want to be? Just like Sudevi wants to be very peaceful, very angelic, very tolerant, very kind, very understanding. I think we all want to be that way. But maybe we're not always like that. Maybe we have a tendency to be short-fused. So our intention has to be very clear that this is how I want to be, this is how I want to react in situations. And then we'll become more conscious of our reactions when we're tempted to react in an impatient way or become disturbed. At that point, you'll realize if you're in this consciousness, it'll be very clear. You'll realize that at this point, I don't have to react the way I normally react. I could react differently. In the moment, you'll realize that. So, it's a good thing, isn't it, to realize, don't you think? Don't you think? Yes, it is. Some of you might be thinking, how can you do that? That's like, you can't do that, that's too difficult. Sorry, I'm moving around here. Well, how do you do that? And how can you do that? The last verse of the third chapter of the Gita, somebody like to find that for me? And we can read it. What it says is that, let's see. If you have the last verse, I could find it, but if someone else can find it, maybe I should find it because that way you can hear it. Okay, hold on everyone. I will find. I'm going to find what verse number it is. It's probably like 340 something, two, if there is 42 verses. Let's see what we have here. Hold on. Yeah. 342. Indriyani paranyahur indrebya paramanaha. Manasastu para buddhir, yo buddhe puratas tu saha. The working senses are superior to dull matter. What does that mean? They can control matter. Mind is higher than the senses. What does that mean? Mind can control the senses. The intelligence is still higher than the mind. What does that mean? The intelligence can control the mind. And the soul is even higher than the intelligence. What does that mean? The soul can control the intelligence. So you say, so what's new about that? What's so great about that? Everybody knows that. Well, what's great about it is that when we're in these situations where we think the only response is our normal conditioned response, we remember that, oh yes. Leslie, we're recording it, so it'll be available. Thank you for coming. Say, oh yes, I learned long ago that I'm a spirit soul, I'm a spiritual being. I'm not the physical body, not the intelligence, I'm not the mind, I'm not the senses. The problem is I think I am, I've identified with them. And so because of that identity, it's hard to believe that I don't have to act according to every impulse, but I don't have to act according to every attraction. Just because something is attractive doesn't mean I have to do anything. I can just go, okay, but I don't want that. It's not going to work. I was just with a devotee, and we were talking about problems. And she said that I've learned that when I confront a situation especially that appears to be attractive, I just fast forward boop, 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 and see, you know, down the road, the next day, the next week, the next month, however far you want to fast forward it, what's going to look like, how it's going to end up. And this is very, very powerful for refining the intelligence. So, okay, I look at a situation, it looks attractive, and I'm feeling the impulse to go do it or have it or say what I want to say Perhaps, okay, not only attractive situation, but a situation that's not attractive, and say what I want to say about something that's bothering me. And then I fast forward and say, okay, if I say that or I do that, what's going to be the result? Is it a result that is in alignment with what I want for my life and my life? Oftentimes you'll see it's not. So then if you think that way, you think, okay, I'm not going to say that. That's not helpful. We have this, I just mentioned this word alignment. Alignment is interesting. Because our actions and our words should be in alignment with what we want to achieve in our lives. And often, our actions and words are in direct opposition to what we want to achieve in our life. Right? Isn't that true? It's true, and that's a problem. And then we're often out of alignment, and then when we're out of alignment, we're not happy. And so the only reason we go after something that we're attracted to is because we think it'll make us happy. But what really makes us happy is being in alignment with our goals, with our intentions, and also with our beliefs and values. What is the right thing? What do we understand to be the right Krishna conscious way of thinking or acting? If we think and act in that way, we'll be happy. There's no question. If we don't think and act in that way, we might experience some ignorance as bliss happiness, but deep down, there'll be a misalignment and we won't feel right. I mean, you can try to ignore it, because if you don't ignore it, you might realize you're not going to feel good about what you just did. So sometimes we try to ignore it and pretend it wasn't the wrong thing, and pretend it's okay, and rationalize it this way and that way, gets us into a lot of trouble. And I don't mean to say we shouldn't be realistic about where we're at. I don't mean to say we should endeavor for something which is impossible. But what I do mean to say is it's important to understand where we want to be, how we want to live, even if we can't do it now, but in the future, and then begin taking steps to get there. Because this verse, Krishna is saying, you as a soul, you control your intelligence controls your mind controls your senses. So in that sense, what this verse means is you don't have to accept any situation other than the situation that ultimately you want to create or you decide to create. Now, let's say you have a conditioned desire, a desire that's very strong, and then you realize, well, it would be better to fulfill this desire in a Krishna conscious way, but still you as a soul are making that determination that this would be the best thing. You're not just running after it wildly, but you're doing it deliberately. You've chosen to do it. So the point is, we can choose better ways of acting than we ordinarily may act. So now, if you apply that to japa, this whole idea, it applies perfectly to japa. Because so many times in japa, as Sudevi knows well, we are not deliberate about our chanting. We're haphazard. We're like, well, whatever goes, goes. Let's roll the dice and see what happens today. Maybe it'll be a good japa session. And some people are like that with their lives. Well, just take it a day at a time. I don't know what's going to happen today. Well, but ultimately, could you have a bad japa session if you have a bad life? What is the cause of a bad japa session? It's not haphazard. It's not accidental. We're the cause of it. I mean, as much as we may not want to admit it, yes, because you might say, well, you know, sometimes I just chant and it's really good and it's just Krishna's mercy and I didn't really do anything. You probably did something the day before, some ecstatic service, or you were probably praying in some way, but you probably did something. But yes, the mercy came to you. Great, you know, so now that the mercy came, the mercy did so much, and don't ever think you had nothing to do with getting the mercy. You did. Or maybe Krishna was just trying to encourage you. But the point is, we have lots of control. Well, at least not lots, but we have lots more than we think. As you advance in devotional service, mercy does more. As you're lower in devotional service, effort, you need more effort. When you're in higher plane, it's all just Krishna showering mercy. Mercy, mercy, mercy. So the result of our japa is not haphazard, it's not accidental. As we know, we're devotees, we understand, we believe in God, nothing's accidental. Even the mercy is not accidental. There's, you know, the causeless mercy, there is some, if you trace out the causeless mercy, you find some cause somewhere. Interesting concept, the causeless mercy has some cause at some level. At least we have the desire, the sincerity, just like if you want, you know, people ask, well, how do I know who is my guru? And Bhaktisiddhanta, he said, just work on your sadhana, come to anartha nivritti, and Krishna will send you a guru, because then you're qualified, so Krishna will help you. So, we even have control of getting a guru, because Krishna responds. So Krishna's always responding to our efforts. So this is important. It's really, really important to have this realization and then become more intentional about what we want to be as devotees and what we want to achieve in Krishna consciousness. And apply that every morning to your japa. So you don't just accept a situation, but you create the situation which is more favorable. And you can do that not only with japa, you can do that in any situation. You go into an unfavorable situation, well, how can we make it as favorable as possible? I mean, the principle of surrender is serve Krishna favorably, to accept what is favorable for bhakti. But sometimes things are not favorable, but some of the things that are not favorable externally or apparently not favorable are simply not favorable because we're making them not favorable. Isn't that interesting? Yes, it is. Sometimes we're making them not favorable. But they actually could be made favorable. You go in a situation and say, this is not favorable for bhakti, but maybe we made it that way. Sometimes we make it unfavorable, and then we blame the situation. Oh, this is not favorable. Well, who made it unfavorable? And even if we didn't make it unfavorable, then the question is, can we turn it into something favorable? And if we can, let's do that. Yes. It's nice that you're here, Sudevi. And it's nice that I know your situation, so we can address it. But this, Sudevi was saying that this applies to her, but actually applies to everybody. It's a very important teaching. Last verse, that's the last verse of chapter 3. Well, it's verse 42, I think it's the last verse. So when we're being pulled by the mind and senses, we think of this verse. And Krishna's saying, the mind controls the senses, and the intelligence controls the mind, and the soul controls the intelligence. Of course, it can work the other way around. If you give the keys to your car, to your senses, then they'll drive your car, and you'll just sit there and watch, and they'll go wherever they decide to go, and you'll just have to go along for the ride. But if you're driving the car, then you can go where you want to go. And I think the problem for many of us is we're not really clear about where we want to go. Or maybe we're clear, but we don't think we can get there, so we don't. No, that's too far. Or we're not going to make it. My car can't make it. And then you don't go there. There's a saying, you only go as high as your highest thoughts. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? You only go as high as your highest thought. So I think for many of us, we shouldn't be so concerned about whether or not we can make it to where we want to be. We should just be concerned about where we want to be, because wherever it is we want to go to, even if we think we can't make it, will be drawn to go in that direction. And so even if you don't make it to the top of the mountain, but you make it somewhere on the mountain, that's better than the bottom of the mountain. Because if you sit on the bottom of the mountain thinking, I can never make it to the top of the mountain, you don't take a step. You go, well, let's just go home. But if you say, I'd like to go to the top, I don't know if I can make it, but I'm going to try, then you'll get somewhere. You'll be better off. So we shouldn't give up because the mountain's too high, even though we'd like to be on top. Just think, yeah, I'd like to be up on there. I'd like to be up there. I mean, how Krishna conscious do you want to be in this life? Do you want to limit it? Say, well, I can't be that Krishna conscious. That's not smart. Just the desire, you know, the desire to be a pure devotee is very important. No, no, Prabhu, I'll never be a pure devotee. No, that's not really how we're trained. We're trained to desire to be a pure devotee. We're not trained to think whether or not we can be. Or actually, we're trained to think we can be if we surrender to Krishna. But even for the sake of argument, you could say it's not even necessary to fully believe whether you can or can't. It's just necessary to want it. I mean, you know, a pure devotee, they come to this point where they don't even think they can achieve it, but they just want it. And they, therefore, they're fixed on getting it. And it's like they think, I don't have any qualification to get it, but I want it so much. And so I'm not going to let my disqualifications or anything get in the way. I just want it. So that's what's important, that we just want it. And that's what Prabhupada is training us, or how he's training us. He's training us to want Krishna consciousness, to want to be a pure devotee. There was one man, he met Prabhupada, and he said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, I want to be a pure devotee. And Prabhupada said, oh, this is a very nice desire. So Prabhupada appreciated it so much. And just the desire to be a pure devotee, that's pure devotional service in itself, that I want to be pure. You want to be pure, you act to achieve your desire, and you don't keep telling yourself, but I can never be pure, I'm so fallen, I'm so this. And a lot of you do that, as I know you, because you talk to me. And a lot of you do that. Yes, yes, but I'm so this, I'm so fallen. And you're just reinforcing, but I can't do this, I can't control that. Keep reinforcing your problem. But Shastra teaches us to think, I want this, I'm not qualified, I'm not good for it, whatever, but I want it. And so we keep striving for it. So we don't, you know, anything that you want, and you don't, it's not useful to tell yourself that you can't have it, that you're not good enough to get it, that you'll never get it, that it's impossible. And how will you get it? So we are trained to pray to Krishna and say, Krishna, I'm not qualified, but I want it, so please help me. So we never give up the desire for it. We don't look at like material situations and say, well, this is impossible, so I'm not going to get it. You know, if that were true, Prabhupada wouldn't have preached. I mean, he did something quite impossible by making us devotees, I think. Quite impossible. But it was his faith in the process. So I often say in the japa workshops that if we're too negative about achieving a higher level of Krishna consciousness, and particularly if that's in relation to higher levels of chanting, that's an offense to the holy name. Because it means that we think the glories of the holy name are exaggeration, that they can't do that for us, that we can't achieve this higher level of Krishna consciousness, the holy name. Somehow it can't do that for me. I'm so bad off, it can't do that. All right, we may be bad off, but we should never think and tell ourselves that we can't achieve it. Okay, you can tell yourself you can't achieve it, but you can't tell yourself that the holy name can't achieve it. And you can't tell your, and you should not tell yourself that you can't achieve it through the holy name, that you can't chant well. Oh, Prabhu, I'm so this. I'll never that. I'll never this. You're exactly right. You will never this and you will never that, because you keep saying you'll never this and you'll never that. And so therefore, I guarantee you will never this and you will never that. It's absolutely true. You have totally empowered yourself to never this or never that. Guaranteed. Just keep chanting that mantra, Prabhu, I'm so this, I'm so that, I'll never this, I'll never that. And I can guarantee you will remain so this and so that, and you will never do this and never do that, is guaranteed. 100%. 100%. So why would anybody in their right mind want to say that? I don't know. No one in their right mind would say that. Correct? That makes sense? Makes sense to me. So this is very, very important. Okay, then you say, yes, but Prabhu, this is how I am. I always think I'm fallen. You know, isn't it good to think I'm fallen? It's good to think you're fallen if thinking you're fallen helps you. It's not good to think you're fallen if thinking you're fallen doesn't help you. And there's a difference between thinking you're fallen in a Krishna conscious way and thinking you're fallen in a material way, which doesn't help you. And I've been talking about the material way. And we've talked about this before. When a devotee feels fallen, all that means for the devotee is becomes more helpless. And he depends more on Krishna. It doesn't mean he gives up. What's the use? I'm just going to give up. What's the use? I'm so fallen. It doesn't, that's material. It doesn't work on him that way. It actually makes, when he sees how fallen he is, just like, you know, let's say you're not good in a particular subject. Well, if you're smart and you want to do well, what do you think? You think, I'm going to have to really try a lot harder than the other students that are naturally good in this subject because it's difficult for me. So if you're struggling with something, that's the smart way to think. Okay, I'm going to have to, because I'm so this or so that, I'm going to have to try harder than others who are not so this or so that. But instead, often many of us think, well, I'm so this and I'm so that, so what's the use? Why try? Now, I have to say something which is quite powerful. Did you know the only reason people fail is because of discouragement? Because when discouragement hits a certain threshold, what happens? You throw in the towel and you quit. Say, I quit, that's it. And a lot of people do that in Krishna consciousness. They just throw in the towel. They just go, that's it, I quit. The only reason anyone will ever fail at anything is they quit, they give up, they stop. If you keep striving, if you're focused on your goal, you will get somewhere. You will get closer to it. You will move forward. Because that's just how the mind works. What you focus on, you move forward. What you look at your life now, you see, you've got what you've been focusing on. You say, and someone says, but I don't have a lot of money. Yeah, because you're focusing on how poor you are. So you remain poor. Just focus on money and I go to the bank tomorrow and there'll be money there. Well, look at a bona fide Vaishya. That's what they do. They think about money 24 hours a day. They just think, how can I make money? How can I make money? I want to make money. That's why they have a lot of money. And the Brahmins thinking, I don't need money. I'm a teacher. So generally the Brahmins don't have a lot. If they do, they give it away. That's how they're thinking. So we may feel fallen, we may feel disqualified. That's all right. In a Krishna conscious sense, it just makes us feel and think, Krishna, I need your help because I want this. Okay, Sudevi has to go. So we're gonna, we have 4 minutes left. Goodbye, Sudevi. She has a program at 6 o'clock, which she's in Seattle, so it's a few moments to six. So what is the cause of discouragement? Well, cause of discouragement is All right, what is the cause of quitting? The cause of quitting is discouragement. And discouragement means to be without courage. It's too difficult, it's too hard. So how do we deal with discouragement? Well, one of the things, interesting things that Prabhupada said, he told me and other devotees, he wrote me and other devotees, that if you encourage others, you'll remain encouraged. So if you're ever discouraged about anything, encourage somebody else about the thing you're discouraged about. Isn't that interesting? If someone writes you, says something like nasty, say nice things to other people. Someone writes you a nasty letter, write nice letters to other people. Write like five of them and tell five people how much you like them. And if you're having financial trouble, then call five people up that aren't and say, I'm so happy for you that you're doing so well. I just want to let you know. You turn it around. It will turn your consciousness around. Because otherwise, when we become discouraged, we reinforce that discouragement. Well, what's the use? Everybody's like this, or it always happens like this. And then we keep telling ourselves how bad it is and how it always happens like this. And then it always happens like this. And then it keeps happening like this. And we keep telling ourselves it always happens like this. So we want to be the encourager. Because by encouraging others, we become encouraged. And we draw to ourselves the encouragement that we give to others. And that's why spreading Krishna consciousness is so valuable, because we become encouraged when we encourage others to be Krishna conscious. We encourage ourselves by encouraging others. So whenever you find yourself in a situation which is negative, do the exact opposite for other people. Someone didn't treat you kindly. Now go treat five people kindly. Right? You went out and you had a hard time in your service, then appreciate others' service. You wanted to achieve something, someone else achieved it. Appreciate. Tell them how much you appreciate that they've achieved it. Normally we don't do that. Normally we just go, why do they have to get that, not me? But we need to encourage others. It's very dangerous to be discouraged. We don't want to be discouraged. Because from discouragement, as I said, we'll quit. And we don't want to quit. It's very important. So thank you all for coming. Sorry for the initial delay. I appreciate that you've come. And next week, Tuesday... No, next week, Wednesday morning, I'll be in India. Anyway, let's see. Maybe we can do it. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.